Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Impoga.
Kenya, for instance, exports tea, flowers, coffee, fruits to Russia at an estimated value of about $87.5 million annually. And because of the suspension to container shipping lines, this has been disrupted. And this export is essential for the survival.
Implications of Russia's war in Ukraine, in the Horn and Eastern Africa, as hundreds of thousands of Africans who are already facing food insecurity are now dealing with a massive deficit in food supplies.
Russia is one of the leading grain exporters in the world. As the international community cuts economic ties with Russia, we can expect a global shortage. In sub-Saharan Africa, this shortage will leave additional people in need of emergency food assistance, many of which may not have otherwise required aid.
Aid groups say the number of people displaced by conflict in Burkina Faso in January spiked to 160,000, bringing the total displaced in the country to 1.7 million.
Where you find people idling, they don't do nothing with their lives. That's one of those things that causes us, because of the mind is playing around. You started thinking too much, you don't have a job, you don't have anything to do, and then suddenly you see yourself going back to your old ways.
And African health groups have warned that the COVID pandemic has led to a rise in drug and alcohol abuse on the continent. Those and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Russia's war in Ukraine has made massive implications in the Horn and Eastern Africa. Humanitarian groups are struggling to help hundreds of thousands of Africans who are already facing food insecurity and are now dealing with a massive deficit in food supplies. Hajir Malim, Regional Director of the Horn and Eastern Africa for Action Against Hunger, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam that 84% of the wheat consumed in Eastern Africa comes from imports, and 90% of that amount comes from Russia and Ukraine.
The wheat demand in these countries actually varies from one country to the other. Some countries like Eritrea 100% rely on wheat produced in that part of the world. Therefore, the inability to be able to provide these products to this region is going to have massive implication on the ability for the household to have access to food down the line. And this situation is even made worse by the currently biting severe drought in the Horn of Africa, where we have already seen in many households where we did our own assessment, Action Against Hunger's own assessment, we found crop production, cereal harvest below 80% what was projected to be harvested this season. Many of the crops have failed. And as a result of that, significant demand on imports to meet the household food needs. What we are seeing already, the compounding effect of the drought, the conflict in this region and the disruption in supply having massive implication on the nutritional situation of children under five.
So you're saying it's kind of like a 1-2-3 punch with not only the drought in the area of Eastern Africa and the Horn, it's the conflict that is happening in parts of the continent there, and also the war in Ukraine from Russia.
That is correct. I think these communities, vulnerable communities, are facing multiple shocks, one after the other, sometimes multiple heat at the same time. And these are vulnerable people that are dependent on casual labor, barely making a living on the base of this. And we have seen in some areas where we did our assessment, we find more than 26% of the households in those areas even have no income and therefore dependent on food aid. And because of this disruption, we are already seeing significant increase. In Mogadishu, our own assessment clearly shows that the prices of wheat have increased by 50% in the last few months. Similarly, other staple food are also prices of staple food are also increasing. Therefore, this is having massive implication on these communities.
You obviously help people who are the most vulnerable, who can't buy food on their own. But then the people that were going to the market and buying staples for their families, they can't even afford anything anymore, you're saying.
That is correct. Somalia, for instance, have recorded more than 600,000 people have moved because of this increase in vulnerability, compounded by food price increase and the biting drought as well.
Africa had done a good deal of exporting to Russia and Ukraine, too, before the war. What kinds of exports are we talking about, and how have African farmers and traders been affected since February 24th when Russia invaded Ukraine?
Kenya, for instance, exports tea, flowers, coffee, fruits to Russia at an estimated value of about $87.5 million annually. And because of the suspension to container shipping lines, this has been disrupted. And this export is essential for the survival.
That was Hajir Malim, Action Against Hunger's regional director of the Horn and Eastern Africa. He was speaking with my colleague, Caro Van Dam from Nairobi, Kenya, on Friday. Say the number of people displaced by conflict in Burkina Faso in January spiked to 160,000, bringing the total displaced in the country to 1.7 million. The aid groups worry the crisis stemming from Russia's invasion of Ukraine will draw much-needed humanitarian funding away from Africa's Sahel region. Henry Wilkins reports from neighboring Ivory Coast.
The spike in displacement comes amid a six-year conflict with armed groups linked to Islamic State and Al-Qaeda and a military coup on the 23rd of January, which saw a military junta come to power in the West African country. Since January 2019, non-profits say the displaced population in Burkina Faso has grown by 2,000%, with over 1.7 million people now uprooted. Tom Pere-Costa is spokesperson for the Norwegian Refugee Council, NRC, in West and Central Africa.
There are increasing numbers of attacks, the destruction of crops, the theft of livestock, which are preventing families to access their fields and their food stocks. So faced with the inability to feed their families, people have had to flee and move towards towns.
Pere Costa added that some donors have said they might reduce aid funding for Burkina Faso as money is diverted to the crisis in Ukraine.
Some donors have already indicated that they would proceed to a 70% cut of our funding to support operations in Ukraine, and we are very concerned that this will become a trend.
Burkina Faso's military junta, led by President Paul-Henri Damiba, has said it hopes to restore security to the country and allow people displaced by the conflict to return home. Asked if security has improved for Burkina Faso since the start of 2022, Paul Melly, an analyst with London-based think tank Chatham House, sounded cautiously optimistic.
The security situation in Burkina Faso has begun to improve in some respects. We've seen some significant successes for the armed forces, but it's still too early to say whether the military's commitment to improved, sustained success in tackling jihadist violence, whether we're really seeing results in that respect.
He points out that many of the recent successes for the military resulted from closer cooperation with French forces, which was instigated by ousted President Roch Kabore. Alexandra Lamarche is senior advocate for West and Central Africa at Refugees International, a Washington-based non-profit.
Russia is one of the leading grain exporters in the world. As the international community cuts economic ties with Russia, we can expect a global shortage. In sub-Saharan Africa, this shortage will leave additional people in need of emergency food assistance, many of which may not have otherwise required aid.
She says the crisis in Ukraine will have devastating effects on crises across sub-Saharan Africa, not just in Burkina Faso. She added that if donor attention is singularly focused on Ukraine in the coming weeks, it may be too late to mitigate the consequences of widespread food insecurity. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Ivory Coast.
In the Democratic Republic of Congo, the main opposition engagement for citizenship and development party says demand for an independent electoral body to organize transparent and credible elections have led to the arrest of the group's supporters. 10 activists were recently sentenced to 10 years in prison They were accused of theft, intentional bodily harm, and malicious destruction. The arrests followed a complaint by Bruno Kabangu, a leading member of the ruling party, who accused the activists of attacking him, but the opposition party says the accusation is false. Martin Fayulu is the leader of the Engagement for Citizenship and Development Party. He tells VOA's Peter Kilote that his group is not deterred in their demands for credible elections, despite efforts, he says, are aimed at thwarting their demands.
You know, the 10 guys that have been jailed, this was an inadvised attempt to intimidate our people and not just our members, but anyone who stand for truth and justice, who are requesting for impartial election. Okay, that to say that our crime or the crime of our people just was demanding free and impartial polls for the 2020 elections.
But Mr. Fayulu, 10 of the activists that you talked about who are members of your party, they have been charged or accused of theft, intentional body harm, and malicious destruction. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, but there is no evidence. We ask our lawyers, ask them to prove, and they even ask to go to the place that the event occurred. That's what they said, to go and reconcile what happened. But they didn't want. The lawyer asked the, for medical tests to see if the guy was really, beaten by someone, but they didn't want to do so. We cannot agree. There is no evidence for anyone to say that those guys have committed any bad doing thing.
What is your party going to do about this? Because some people are denying that these activists are being held to intimidate or harass your opponent. Why don't your party wait for the judicial process to complete, to be found either guilty or innocent? How do you respond to that?
Yeah, but we are there. We are there. We are waiting for the judiciary process to be completed. We are waiting for that. Our lawyers are asking the right judgment. Because what we will not do is just to leave this guy like that. Because for us, this should be a decade of immeasurable opportunity for all Congolese. We will not leverage our collective future for the enrichment of the political elite.
Are you therefore saying that your demand for an independent electoral body to administer free, transparent, and credible election by activists of your party is the reason behind what you say is intimidation and harassment by the authorities using state institutions like the police and the judiciary?
Yeah, that's right. That they are trying to discourage us. They are trying to continue, to even let Congolese people know that we are wasting our time, that they continue to do what they have to do. For us, the free and fair election, the impartial electoral commission, and is a key. Then the only way to reach the that demand is the consensus, and everybody, all the stakeholders have to discuss, to meet, and to find a way to have impartial election. Almost the whole commission managed by one party, and those guys, they cannot organize the election properly. And this is our demand that will continue until the end. And then we are asking everybody, including the international community, including the MONUSCO, that this is the time that everybody has to come and to set up for, you know, a transparency and impartial election in Congo, because this time around, the Congolese will not accept any fraud. They will not accept any delay for organizing the election. People are prepared. People are prepared for the 2023 election and the fair and the free and the impartial election, which will give us what the polls have in it. We will not accept any fraudulent result this time around.
That was Martin Fayulu, the leader of the Engagement for Citizenship and Development Party. He spoke with my colleague Peter Klote. Health groups have warned that the COVID pandemic has led to a rise in drug and alcohol abuse on the continent, but a gap in data is making it hard to monitor. In South Africa, a Soweto-based nonprofit is scrambling to help youth to stay clean and sober. Linda Jiftash reports from Johannesburg.
Substance abuse, particularly alcohol consumption, has been on the rise in Africa for years, according to the World Health Organization. The coronavirus pandemic that resulted in job losses and school closures has now amplified the problem. The Ikaheng Children's Charity in Soweto says as many as 10 young people contact them daily suffering from addiction. Lydia Mutlong is the acting program manager.
During the lockdowns, they used to go and drink, and some they were left in the houses alone. The parents are at work, and they start having the house parties and introduced to the alcohol, end up into crystal meth, which is very common around here, especially with school children.
While Ikakeng monitors the rise of addiction and the young people they're helping, Motlong says national statistics on drug and alcohol abuse are sorely lacking.
We normally get the statistics for COVID, we get the statistics for HIV, but we'll never had any statistics for drugs and substance. And I think if we can have that plan, the government can have that plan and say, at the moment, our statistics is such a big number, and then our plan is about working on reducing it by 50%, maybe 20, 25, and then start funding the organizations that are working with drugs and substance so that they fight it as they are fighting for HIV and AIDS, as they are fighting for COVID.
It's not just South Africa that is lacking data on substance abuse, but the continent as a whole. Florence Bangana is the African Regional Advisor on Substance Abuse for the World Health Organization.
We may not count the exact numbers in each and every country. We know we have a problem. We also know that the services are inadequate. That one we know for a fact. Very often, the alcohol treatment centers in the government facilities are underfunded. But I think if we were to begin by investing resources into building up the services, then we would be able to collect the data.
She says investing in prevention would also be beneficial and less costly than treating addiction later on. Ikaheng's caregivers like Nomali Monorang look for warning signs among the children they support. She knows them firsthand, having struggled with addiction herself.
Sometimes we need to start with parents. And most of children don't know how to talk about their feelings. You don't know how to express. You know, children need to be taken care in all of your his life in all areas, like talking, having the conversation, even if it's deep, even if it's uncomfortable, you need to give the child the chance to talk.
For those looking to get clean, the organization refers them to support groups that help people transition in and out of rehab. They're trying to offer skills training as well, so recoverees can find jobs and a purpose. Vusi Nzimande is a project manager for the support program called Still We Rise.
Where you find people idling, they don't do nothing with their lives. That's one of those things that causes us, because of the mind is playing around. You started thinking too much, you don't have a job, you don't have anything to do, and then suddenly you see yourself going back to your old ways.
For the young people he's helped, getting clean has been the first step. But experts say they'll need opportunities and jobs to give them hope and keep them out of trouble in the long run. Linda Giftash for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Faced with a growing elephant population, the Botswana government says it has allocated hunting licenses to citizens for animals outside conservation areas. The Southern African country has the world's largest elephant herd at 130 and reintroduced hunting in 2019. From Havarone, reporter Mukundisi Dube has the details.
Minister of Environment, Natural Resources, Conservation and Tourism, Filda Giring, recently told Parliament the government started allocating hunting licenses to citizens after the lifting of the hunting ban in 2019. Her response comes after calls in the National Assembly to control or manage free-ranging elephants.
There are citizen hunting quarters, but all along there were no elephants in those areas. However, after the reinstatement of hunting in 2019, the elephants are now part of species that can be hunted.
Giring says the government has a revised elephant management plan to ensure the sustainable utilization of the animals and reduce conflict between the herds and human communities. She, however, says Botswana will not consider translocating or culling free-range elephants.
Culling, I don't want to go there. We want sustainable management that will benefit communities. We don't want to cull, as we have elephant management plans. We can't translocate the elephants. It's not easy. To reduce the incidents, we can revise our land use so that the elephants don't encroach into plowing fields or settlements.
In the National Assembly, legislator Neva Tsabang represents a community with a large herd of free-ranging elephants. Tsabang suggests citizens be allocated hunting quotas for the elephants outside conservation areas, or alternatively says the government should consider culling the animals.
Why don't you consider culling? You say the elephants migrate, but we know some are permanent in that area. That is a non-wildlife or conservation area. It's important for you to visit the residents and tell them that they are now free to hunt.
That is a non-wildlife area. That is a non-conservation area.
Botswana has reported increasing human-wildlife conflict, particularly with elephants, which at times have killed people or damaged crops. Minister Giring says communities should utilize the Conservation Trust funds to build electric fences to keep out the animals. For VOA, this is Mkondisi Dube in Havarone, Botswana.
Like much of Africa, few women in Kenya own property, and less than 14% of Kenya's real estate brokers are women. For VOA, Juma Majanga reports from Nairobi on the challenges women face in the real estate industry.
Kenya's real estate market has been booming for a decade, with more commercial and residential projects going up in urban centers. Despite the boom, women still face a myriad of challenges to become property owners and builders. Robin Emerson is the president of Women in Real Estate, a networking organization in Kenya.
I've sat in on some international development meetings where even just 2 weeks ago, where people that are international donors and international funders talking about affordable housing, and everyone at that table were men. Who's at the table talking about where $8 billion are going to go are all men. Now that's unacceptable.
Despite the challenges, more women are venturing into real estate development and finding success. Leah Wamboi, a successful real estate developer in Nairobi, quit her beverage selling business to become a real estate developer. At some point, she doubted her move and thought of quitting. She recalls with a smile. Today, she has built over 200 homes in the Nairobi metropolitan area, though she and other women face many challenges in the male-dominated business.
So you work with a contractor who feels that they should not expect to hear things from a woman, or there is a particular way that we've been doing things and this is how we do things. They think that you probably don't know because you're a woman.
Having built one of the leading construction materials manufacturing companies in Kenya over the past two decades, architect Winnie Ngumi understands too well the obstacles women face.
Even today, when I represent the company, say
We are seeking a financial facility. We are trying to get a loan. I do face bias. It is almost as if I should have a man with me in the room when I'm negotiating for credit lines for the business.
Women in Real Estate, or WIRE, is working to help. Here again is the organization's president, Emerson.
We have a mentorship program that we take professionals to walk with them over that journey and to just assure them, to be there to answer any questions that they might have, even addressing sexual harassment issues that they experience, and to help them to be confident that they can speak out about these issues and that that space is for their, is theirs also.
Industry experts say it will take time to come out of deeply rooted cultural and traditional beliefs in Kenya and across Africa that make it harder for women to thrive in many sectors. But advocates believe because of women like Robin Emerson, Leah Wamboi, and Winnie Ngumi, gradual change is possible. Juma Majanga for VA News, Nairobi.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Netland Africa. And coming up in the second half of the program, sports, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs, and music from our African collection. And now in Netland Africa Sports, the South African Football Association has said to bid to host the African Champions League finals for both men and women. The men's final this season will be a single game for the third time, rather than a two-leg tie as previously had been the tradition. The Moroccan city of Casablanca hosted last year's final, which saw Al Ahly beat South Africa's Kaizer Chiefs to give the Egyptians their 10th title. The second edition of the Women's Champions League finals, for which eight teams qualify for, is scheduled to be held later in 2022. The inaugural tournament in November 2021 featured seven regional qualifiers alongside Wade Degla from host nation Egypt. South Africa's Mamelodi Sundowns lifted the trophy following a 2-0 win over Huskers Ladies from Ghana. In the CAF Champions League, Mamelodi Sundowns moved to within a point of qualification to the quarterfinals after completing a double over defending champions Al Ahly, beating them 1-0 in Johannesburg on Saturday. The victory took Sundowns 10 points, 6 ahead of Ahly, Al Merrikh and Al Hilal, who are all on 4 points with the 2 rounds of matches left. While Sundowns are comfortably moving into the last 8, holders Al Ahly now have a mountain to climb and they must win their last 2 games to enhance their hopes of making the quarters. Esperance also moved to the top of Group C in the CAF Champions League after beating Etoile du Sahel 2-0 in the Tunisian derby in Tunis on Saturday. In athletics, a doping ban for Thando Dlodlo means that his South African teammates are set to lose the gold medals they won at the 2021 World Athletics Relays. Dlodlo, who ran the first leg of the 4x100m final at the event in Poland last May, tested positive for testosterone at the South African Championships in Pretoria a few weeks before the team's success in Chozo. The 23-year-old has been suspended for 2.5 years by the South African Doping Institute for Drug-Free Sport. A spokesperson for Simbine, who finished fourth in the 100 meters at the 2020 Olympics in Tokyo, said he was devastated but that he would not be giving any further comment at the time. It means Italy would be promoted to become men's 4x100m World Athletics Relays gold medalist, with Japan set to get silver medals and Denmark moving up to bronze. World Athletics has yet to comment on Dlodlo's case or disqualify the South African team. The sanctions will not affect South Africa's continental record for the 4x100m relay that the team, which included Dlodlo, set at the 2019 World Athletics Championships in Qatar. On a sad note, former Nigerian midfielder Justin Christopher has died at the age of 40. Local media reports Christopher collapsed on Wednesday morning at his hotel in Jos in central Nigeria. Christopher reportedly played the Shosho game of football on Tuesday afternoon. The official cause of death is yet to be established. Christopher made his debut for the Super Eagles in 2001 and went on to accumulate 11 appearances. He was part of the Nigerian squad that went to the 2002 World Cup in Korea and Japan. The Nigerian Football Federation said in a statement it was devastated to learn of Christopher's death. And that's it for this edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospects in time of conflict and in time of peace. Here is one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Last week, it was reported that the World Bank has just issued a study on South Africa. This report states that South Africa is the most unequal country and that race is in the center of this problem. Let us take a deep breath and note that this is not a report written by Julius Malema, whose Freedom Party has been saying some of the things mentioned in the report. Nor is it unknown to close observers of South Africa. The significance is that the World Bank is a reputed, responsible institution who has in the past produced very important studies. Secondly, the World Bank has all the necessary data to know how to compare the conditions in South Africa with other countries. So when it says that South Africa is the most unequal country, one should take notice. Of course, there is the danger that those who are the beneficiary of this indictment in South Africa have always been able to find ways and means to point their fingers in other directions. But this time, they should not be permitted to continue to muddy the waters, such as the comments by a researcher in South Africa that he denies the content of this World Bank report. This is not the time for people to put forward flimsy excuses because they may not want to tackle the realities pointed out in the World Bank report. This is the time for the government of South Africa and the leaders of the economic and social spheres in South Africa to come together to study carefully what are the factors that were mentioned in the World Bank report. One should also be careful to listen to those who would say that after almost 26 years after apartheid system, one should stop looking at race as a factor in the society. Yes, also, it is true that one has seen massive corruption in the political, social life of South Africa. And we know also there may exist state capture, but this is not the reason to take lightly the report of the World Bank. The international community also has a responsibility to assist the government of South Africa and all other social and economic groups to look carefully at this report and to see how best to assist the country in taking another turn. This may be a ticking time bomb, and the economic and social leaders of the global community cannot relax and say South Africa is a major industrialized country of South Africa. That may be true, but also true is what the report has stated. South Africa is an unequal society, and this has been a factor known to researchers who have been shocked at the failure by the leaders of the country to take timely action. So if the international community wants to be helpful, it should now join South African government and people to tackle these factors head on once and for all. Thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Joner, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. It's Sunday here on Headline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect with music from the continent.
Watoto zuri kama mimi, wenye miuno kama peni, wanakuchora kwa pembeni, wanasubiri tu kuita. Rewind, 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 rewind. Bend down, bend down, bend down, bend down. Cheza, 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 cheza. Kwa manjo, kwa manjo, kwa manjo. Hey, cheza, angusha moko moko. Kuna wavini na kanga moko. Ikikiono feni na sio kokoto. Kama weki meteni pizza kushoto. Unarudi nyuma, unakwenda mbele. Tikisa kiono bega kaka nyele. Mizuka kipanda weki ya kenele. Kwenye dance floor. It's the DJ. Kudusha magoma kama yote. Kuruka mpaka kuchi. Mr. DJ, Mr. DJ, Mr. DJ, kudusha magoma kama yote. Nataka kuruka mpaka kuchi. Mr. DJ, Mr. DJ.
انا ما استاهلش اكون معاك.
Kanibaki nawe nahisi nimetamani nikupe vya kukupaga wisha
nimeshakuona unavyo ninyemelea I'm not your ordinary girl chunga
sambuisia umezikoroga na macho haya naga pazia tanasha umeniroga we dada
Yeah.
And that was our Sunday music spot on Mainland Africa from the English service of the Voice of America. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us tonight. Hope you enjoyed the program. And as you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Join us again on Saturday. Have a very good evening.